This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal. Today is a rather unusual, very, very exciting show, I think, where I have a return engagement with Ole Damigard to talk about what's going on, assassinations, a host of really important issues. But it begins with an interview that I did with Joshua Blakeney, who is the press TV correspondent for Canada, which seemed to me so important in relation to what's going on in Syria and the grotesque abuse of our nation by our leaders who are lying to us again and again and again, that I felt it was indispensable we begin there. You will see that Ole and I then continue with a discussion of that issue, and it carries us back into a series of American assassinations. I think you're going to enjoy it a great deal. So, here is the show for today. Israel has a history of false flag attacks. Goes back to 1946 and the assault on the King David Hotel, where Irgun terrorists dressed as Arabs blew it up. Adrian Salbucci and I have published on the false flag attacks in Argentina in 1992, where they blew up their own embassy, and then because it didn't kill enough Israelis, they did it again in 1994 by blowing up their own Jewish community center. The events of 9/11 were spectacular because Israel and the Mossad were deeply involved. In fact, it appears that the destruction of the World Trade Center was outsourced to Israel. And because the World Trade Center, the Twin Towers in particular, appear to have been destroyed using a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes, it appears that Israeli nukes were used on 9/11 in New York City. This has to be coupled together with the ongoing effort by Israel, which was eager for 9/11 in order to motivate the involvement of the United States in the Middle East so that it could deconstruct the modern Arab states and break them into little statelets, such as in the case of Iraq, a Sunni part, a Shia part, a Kurdish part. You already have the Israeli ministers talking about the way in which Syria is going to fall apart similarly, but they are trying to justify U.S. intervention on the basis of fabricated, clearly fabricated chemical attacks. Russia Today has just done a nice piece revealing evidence that these were rebel operations. We have Obama downplaying the possibility of military intervention at the same time they're moving American warships into place. And what has to be understood is the role of the NSA surveillance. Take, for example, the Bulgarian situation. Because of the NSA surveillance, they know where everyone is at any time. So if they need a suitable patsy to blame, as in this case, this young Canadian, they can do it because of the massive surveillance they've been conducting, which is dominated by Israel. That's something else the American people do not appreciate. The massive NSA surveillance, which cannot possibly be directed at detecting domestic terrorist threats, because a subcommittee of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Intelligence reported on 3 October 2012 that based upon its survey of 680 fusion center reports, where fusion centers merge federal, state, and local anti-terrorist activity gathered between 2009 and 2010, that they found in those 680 reports scattered all over the United States, zero, no indications whatsoever of a single domestic terrorist act, which, given the size and variation of the sample, very reasonably justifies the inference that domestic terrorist threats in the United States are virtually non-existent. But what the NSA is doing is targeting those that it believes might pose resistance to the national security state, veterans, constitutionalists, Ron Paul supporters, 9/11 truthers, NRA members. It's completely outrageous. They can also blackmail politicians. For example, a recent amendment that was to defund the NSA surveillance program passed by 12 votes, 215 to 203, and I'm very confident that 13 members of the House who did not vote because they were induced not to vote by threats of blackmail and extortion. They are going after our emails, our telephone calls, our medical records, our financial records. And in this case, very conveniently, they would know that there would happen to be a Canadian in the vicinity on whom they could place the blame for this act, which I have no doubt was brought about by Israeli operatives killing Israelis. And the fact that Netanyahu has simply begged the question by taking for granted that, of course, it was, you know, someone who was anti-Israeli, and that it was picked up and repeated by Canadian politicians, that it was someone who was anti-Israeli, that it was a Canadian, that he was who was responsible, that ultimately will not withstand investigation, I am very sure. And it's therefore most appropriate that the Bulgarian authorities themselves have shown hesitation to draw such damning conclusions when the evidence is virtually non-existent, or I would submit actually against it, given the past history of false flag attacks perpetrated by Israel itself. I don't believe any serious student of the Middle East regards Hezbollah as a terrorist organization. However, the al-Nusra Front, operating against the Syrian government, has committed over 300 terrorist acts and is a bona fide terrorist organization. It is allied with the Free Syrian Army, which itself is being funded by Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Israel, where no doubt that the United States is covertly making contributions. We were told that al-Qaeda was responsible for the attacks on 9/11, even though al-Qaeda was an organization we created in Afghanistan in order to resist the Soviet Union's occupation of that nation at the time, where Osama bin Laden was our man in Afghanistan and instrumental in providing Stinger missiles to the resistance. Here we are now wanting to support the rebels who are allied with al-Qaeda in Syria. This suggests that the whole demonization of a government or a group by the American or the Israeli government, for that matter, is merely a public relations stunt intended to justify predetermined conclusions about the actions to be taken, where I fear if the United States moves into Syria that we are on the brink of World War III, because Vladimir Putin has demonstrated his credentials as the only bona fide statesman astride the world stage by providing Syria with S-300 and no doubt by now S-400 anti-missile batteries, among the most sophisticated in the world, and is standing firm. Netanyahu is very clever to bait Obama into drawing a red line in Syria, namely the use of chemical weapons, which Obama has said would be a game changer. Once you draw a red line, Netanyahu and his allies will cleverly arrange that it should be violated. The idea that the Syrian government should use these chemical weapons when a United Nations inspection team is about to arrive is simply absurd. They have not been using these weapons. The evidence indicates it's the rebels who have been using these weapons, just as in the beginning, the rebels slaughtered lots of citizens of Syria and blamed it on the Assad government. It is all a charade. It is all a hoax. And it goes to the heart of the Israeli policy of trying to dominate the Middle East by taking apart the Arab states. Let that not come to pass. It's increasingly apparent that the Canadian government, no less than the American government, is suffering from massive infiltration by proponents of Zionism who are putting the interests of Israel ahead of their own national interests. That happened here in the United States. The ultimate result was 9/11, brought to us compliments of neocons, most of whom were joined as U.S. Israeli citizens in the Department of Defense and the Mossad itself, in order to inflame the American public to reverse our foreign policy, where at least officially we never attacked any nation that had not attacked us first, to justify the invasion of Afghanistan, which took place about 3 weeks after the events of 9/11, when no determination could possibly have been made by that time as to who was responsible, and subsequently, of course, the invasion of Iraq, and on the other hand, to subvert the Constitution of the United States by the passage of the Patriot Act, which has been used now in combination with the NSA, UK's massive surveillance to convert the United States into a fascistic police state. I'm sorry to say, but all the indications are that Homeland Security has been preparing for conduct a massive civil war against the American people, including obtaining some 2 billion rounds of 40 caliber hollow point ammunition, not even permissible in combat under the Hague Convention of 1899, 2,700 light tanks, 7,000 assault weapons. They've gone so far as to make special arrangements with mortuaries and funeral homes should there be an excess of casualties beyond what could be handled by hospitals and emergency care centers. I'm afraid the situation is becoming increasingly grim, and that Barack Obama is continuing to violate his oath of office by failing to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States from all enemies, foreign and domestic. Well, there are many who are highly naive and who do not study these cases. I submit anyone who studies the article Adrian Sabucci and I published on VoltaireNet, which is entitled False Flag Attacks in Argentina, 1992 and 1994, will see these very simple, uncomplicated cases are so clear and obvious that they leave no doubt or hesitation about who was responsible. Israelis will kill other Israelis. Jews will kill other Jews. It's happened in the past. It's happening now. And I guarantee it's going to continue into the future, alas. Of course, the motto of the Mossad is make war by deception. They are the foremost masters of false flag attacks, of committing crimes and blaming them on others to gain political advantage. And Benjamin Netanyahu is a very clever fellow, an incredible cynic, and a man who is capable of, in my judgment, enormous sadism in relation to his treatment of other populations, including, most obviously, the Palestinians, where Israel is running the world's largest concentration camp in Gaza. The situation is disgusting. The world should stand up for human rights. They have allowed Israel to violate one declaration by the United Nations after another. They have a massive supply of nuclear weapons, and yet they've managed to focus attention on Iran, which has not only no nuclear weapons program, but which has also signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty and allowed inspectors when Israel has done none of the above. The situation is beyond belief. In fact, an objective observer being presented with all the facts would say the situation is a manifest absurdity were it not for some clever machinations being played here on the order of propaganda and disinformation, which require an intellectual and analytical approach to dissect, but where the evidence, once that has been undertaken, becomes clear and unmistakable. Well, it's moments like this that give us pause and hope that in some cases, at least, rationality will prevail. Edward Snowden, for example, was upholding his responsibility to the Constitution, an oath he took 3 different times. He has blown the whistle on this massive surveillance, which is a travesty of the Fourth Amendment. Even Barack Obama, however, has stood up for the surveillance and against Obama and against Snowden, which means that Obama is in a very open, direct, candid fashion, violating his own oath of office. Sometimes we have events that give us hope. Edward Snowden is one of those. And in this instance, Bulgaria is yet another. Hezbollah is an admirable organization that has been fighting for the rights of the Arab people against Israel and is the only Arab entity to successfully defeat Israel in a combat situation where Israel did not resort to the use of its nuclear weapons. Ironically, the attacks that Israel has launched on Syria, including at least one that appears to have involved the use of Israeli tactical nuclear weapons, provided the opportunity for Vladimir Putin to enter the scene on both humanitarian grounds and in defense of international law. Israel was violating the sovereignty of Syria, just as the United States has been violating the sovereignty of Pakistan and of many other nations by its use of drones and violation of international law. law. The rushing to a judgment, announcing a conclusion about who is responsible absent any serious investigation is a sure sign that we're being subjected to a propaganda assault. It happened on 9/11 when even before the second tower had been blown apart, anchors on national networks were talking about responsibility having been claimed by the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. And believe it or not, where footage was being shown of the Palestinian people celebrating and cheering as though it were in response to these attacks on New York City, when in fact it was actually archival footage that had been resurrected from religious or political incidents that had occurred years and years before. We know something terribly wrong is taking place when these judgments are offered that simply beg the question by taking for granted conclusions that deserve serious research and justification. But that's the way it's played in political theater, and where you play too on popular sentiments, meaning beliefs that most people take to be true, such as that Jews wouldn't deliberately murder Jews in order to promote a political agenda, or that the American government wouldn't deliberately slaughter 3,000 Americans to promote a political agenda. I'm sorry to say those are myths that have been contradicted by history, as all of us must become sophisticated enough to understand, to recognize, and to deal with in a serious fashion. The Odago messaging service was warning Jews who worked in the World Trade Center they shouldn't come to work that day. I believe exactly one Jew died in the destruction of the World Trade Center, and he was himself apparently a Mossad op who somehow got caught up in it all. I was even phoned by a little old lady who lived in Brooklyn who told me that the rabbi had told their synagogue not to go into Lower Manhattan that day. They're looking out for their own, but they're perfectly willing to slaughter them when necessary and appropriate, as was the case in Argentina in 1992 and 1994, and now it appears in Bulgaria in 2013.
Well, I think the Canadian government and media are behaving reprehensibly by swallowing the Israeli angle of this Bulgarian bombing. And, you know, it's just completely strange, it doesn't make any sense that Hezbollah would do this bombing. The only purpose was to get get the European Union to label Hezbollah a terrorist group. And it's interesting that the National Post, which is the Israeli Mossad mouthpiece in Canada, sort of gives the game away in their recent story on the Canadian who's been blamed for being involved in this Bulgarian bombing. The National Post story says that, quote, one of the worst recent terror attacks to be blamed on a Canadian, the July 18, 2012 bombing, has already had policy impacts, although not those intended by those responsible. So they're assuming that Hezbollah is actually responsible and stupid enough to do this bombing, saying, please list us as a terrorist group. I think it's more likely that those responsible for this bombing and for virtually all major acts of violence on Earth know exactly why they're doing their bombings, and the outcomes usually are indeed those intended by the bombers. In this case, the only winner is the Israelis, and once again, this fits the pattern in which these false flag Israeli-sponsored terror attacks are blamed on Israel's enemies and have bad consequences for Israel's enemies, from 9/11, which we now know was an Israeli operation, primarily with the connivance of members of the Bush administration and the U.S. military, to all of the many follow-ups to 9/11. The same pattern continues to emerge. And what's inexplicable is why Western governments that have absolutely nothing to gain by being dragged into Israel's wars continue to accept these ludicrous stories from Israel that Arabs and Muslims are supposedly going out and carrying out these attacks that benefit no one but Israel. So I hope that Canada will think twice before it goes along with this Israeli script. It's time to ask who gained from that bombing in Bulgaria. And I think the answer to that is pretty obvious. Well, I think that's probably how it works. I think that if your government doesn't go along with what Israel tells it to do, then something terrible will happen to your country, and it'll be blamed on Israel's enemies. And this pattern happens over and over and over. And the Norway slaughter of the entire next generation of the left party leaders, the Labour Party leaders in Norway, was another case where Norway had been standing up against Israel. And suddenly this crazed terrorist attack happens, punishing the party that was responsible. So, yes, I think that the Israelis were probably punishing the Europeans by bombing the bus in Bulgaria, but then doing it in such a way that they could blame their enemy, Hezbollah, and sort of, you know, kill two birds with one stone. Well, you know, the people who say that Israel won't kill Jews, I think, have kind of overestimated Israel's respect for life, including Jewish life. In fact, the Zionists have a long history of slaughtering Jews. Hannah Arendt famously pointed out that the Jewish leadership during World War II, and especially the Zionist leadership, cooperated with the Nazis in perpetrating the Holocaust. And however you view the Holocaust, there is no question that the Zionists were completely on board with this operation to ethnically cleanse European Jews and to get them out of Europe, because the Zionists wanted them in Palestine. And from that moment on, Zionists have been responsible for the slaughter of huge numbers of Jews, as well as huge numbers of people of various other religions and ethnicities. You know, among the most famous cases are the irradiation of many, many thousands of Sephardic Jewish children who were immigrating to Israel, many of them from Morocco and other Arab countries. They were given lethal doses, in some cases, of radiation, and very large numbers of them died, and virtually all the rest of them were permanently very badly damaged and disabled. And this was actually done with the connivance of the U.S. The Israelis were doing these radiation experiments and giving the results to the U.S. Israel does not really have any interest in protecting Jewish people. It does have a history of protecting Zionists, and especially its own wealthy and powerful citizens. But I don't think that they would even blink at blowing up a school bus full of Jewish kids. Right. I think Canada has followed a very bad road. It used to be a little bit independent. I remember in the 60s, Canada was a haven for Americans who were standing on principle and refusing to join the Vietnam War, which killed many millions of Vietnamese people, as well as 50,000 Americans. It was completely pointless. Canada was absolutely right to be helping Americans avoid service in Vietnam. And Canada has also helped Americans get to Cuba. There are many other cases where Canadian policies historically have been a bit more enlightened than American imperial policies. But now that the American empire was taken over by the extremist Likudnik Zionists with the 9/11 coup d'etat, it seems that those same Zionists own Canada outright in the same way that they now own the U.S. outright. And so the same brutal imperial policies that have been turned against the enemies of Israel after the 9/11 coup are being inflicted on Canada as well as the U.S., but this time Canada has absolutely no ability to stand up and insist on following at least a slightly independent policy. So Canada is really becoming the colony of a colony. The U.S. has been colonized by Israel. And
is there anybody going to listen to my story, all about the girl who came to stay? She's the kind of girl you want so much it makes you sorry. Still, you don't regret a single day. Ah, girl. Girl, girl. When I think of all the times I've tried so hard to leave her, she will turn to me and start to cry. She promises the earth to me, and I believe her. After all this time, I don't know why. Ah, girl. Girl, girl. She's looking good. She acts as if it's understood. She's cool. Ooh, 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 girl. Girl, girl. Was she told when she was young that pain would lead to pleasure? Did she understand it when they said that a man must break his back to earn his day of leisure? Will she still believe it when he's dead? Oh, girl. Girl, girl.
Can now say with moral certainty and considerable scientific authority that the death of JFK was committed by a meticulously executed conspiracy which was obscured by an extensive cover-up. Murder in Dealey Plaza, edited by James Fetzer, goes to the heart of the JFK assassination. You'll read new and up-to-date information regarding the Secret Service, the Lincoln limousine, the medical evidence, the cover-up, altering the film, framing the patsy, and the silent historians. Also, 16 smoking guns, each one crushing the government's lone assassin scenario. A world-class chronology of November 22nd, 1963. Chapters by David W. Mantic, Gary Aguilar, Vincent Palomara, Douglas Weldon, Jack White, Ira David Wood III, James H. Fetzer, Doug Horn, and a classic essay by Bertrand Russell. The complete story in the pages of one single book, edited by James H. Fetzer. Read it now. Read it again. You'll use it as a reference. Murder in Dealey Plaza. Available at Amazon.com and major bookstores around the world. It's murder.
Thank you.
Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, with a return engagement from Ole Damgaard, who is from Sweden originally but is living in Spain. We're talking about assassinations, about which Ole knows a great deal. But before we begin, I want to talk about the situation in Syria, which seems to me to be, you know, completely, to paraphrase John Kerry, because I have a headline here that the attacks are an obscenity. What is obscene is the United States and France and England and Israel planning to attack Syria. There appear to be multiple motives involved here. The chemical use of chemical weapons appears to be contrived, done by the rebels. I published an article I would like everyone in the audience to read here. Israel gets its want. World War III, not if, but when, and soon, on Veterans Today. And since I published that article, I've added Facebook comments to a host of articles that have appeared to make it updated, and I just want to mention those and then invite Ole to comment on whatever he finds most relevant. One article is Russia warns of catastrophic consequences if Syria hit. Russia on Tuesday warned a military intervention in Syria could have catastrophic consequences for the region and called on the international community to show prudence over the crisis. Attempts to bypass the Security Council, once again to create artificial, groundless excuses for a military intervention in the region, are fraught with new suffering in Syria and catastrophic consequences for other countries in the Middle East and North Africa, a foreign ministry spokesman said. We are calling on our American partners and all members of the world community to demonstrate prudence and strict observance of international law, especially the fundamental principles of the UN Charter, ministry spokesman Alexander Lukashev said in a statement. Earlier, Deputy Foreign Minister Gennady Gadilov said that Moscow regretted Monday's decision by the U.S. to postpone a meeting on the Syrian crisis, as Western powers mulled military action over last week's chemical attack in Syria. My comment, we cannot say that Russia has not warned us. Since hitting a few Syrian targets would not in and of itself be catastrophic, they are addressing the consequences of what will ensue in response to launching cruise missiles against Syria. And it ain't going to be pretty. Next. Military strikes on Syria as early as Thursday, U.S. officials say. NBC News reports that a military strike against Syria could come as early as Thursday. NBC's Jim Milkoshevsky, Politico's Rebecca Seiderbrin, the Washington Post's Ed O'Keefe, and Representative Adam Schiff, Democrat of California, discuss. This was on NBC News. The United States could hit Syria within 3 days of missile strikes, beginning Thursday in an attack meant more to send a message to the Syrian regime than to cripple its military, senior U.S. officials told NBC News. The disclosure added to a growing drumbeat around the world for military action against Syria, believed to have used chemical weapons in recent days against scores of civilians and rebels who've been fighting the government for 2 years. In 3 days of strikes, the Pentagon could assess the effectiveness of the first wave and target what was missing in further rounds, the official said. My comment? This is insane. By announcing what they plan to do, they are allowing themselves to be targeted. They think they are being clever. This is preposterous. The first cruise missile will be the start of World War III. Here's another. Here's the latest. Obama's planning 2-day Syria strike. President Obama is weighing a military strike against Syria that would be of limited scope and duration while keeping the United States out of deeper involvement in the nation's civil war, according to a Washington Post report citing senior U.S. officials. Such an attack would probably last no more than 2 days and see cruise missiles launched from ships or possibly long-range aircraft striking military targets not directly related to Syria's weapons arsenal, the newspaper said. My comment. There cannot be a limited attack. Who knows whether it might go on and on and on. There will be a massive response from Russia and Syria. The first cruise missile launched will be the start of World War III. Here's another. UN admit it didn't ask for access in Syria until Saturday. John Kerry stated yesterday, I spoke on Thursday with Syrian Foreign Minister Mualim, and I made it very clear to him that if the regime, as he argued, had nothing to hide, then the response should be immediate. Immediate transparency, immediate access, not shelling. Their response needed to be unrestricted and immediate access. Failure to permit that, I told him, would tell its own story. Instead, for 5 days, the Syrian regime has refused to allow UN inspectors access to the site of the attack that would allegedly exonerate them. Instead, it attacked the area further, shelling it and systematically destroying evidence. This is not the behavior of a government that has nothing to hide. On Thursday, Reuters reported the United Nations demanded Syria give its chemical weapons experts immediate access on Thursday to rebel-held Damascus suburbs where poison gas appeared to have killed hundreds just a few miles from the UN team's hotel. In fact, according to an exchange at a news conference at the UN today, the UN did not make a formal request of the Syrian government until Saturday, and the Syrian government responded positively the next day. My comment? We have a government of liars, cheats, and thieves. They lie to get us into wars none of us want. They cheat out of our children's lives and our national treasury, and they rob us of our precious heritage and standing as a moral leader among nations. Here's another. War on Syria, 20 pounds of stupid in a 10-pound bag by William Rivers Pitt. I'm just going to throw this out on the stoop and see if the cat licks it up. Instead of attacking Syria, how about we don't attack Syria? Crazy, I know. This is America. After all, in our presence, like nothing more than to flip a few cruise missiles at other countries combined with a few bombing sorties for good measure, because it's a hell of a lot easier than actual statecraft. Besides, it looks good on television. And all those meanies in Congress can't accuse a commander-in-chief of not doing anything. Oh, also, cruise missiles and bombs cost a lot. So if we pull the trigger on Syria, someone will get paid handsomely. What ho, this we call diplomacy, right? Flatten a few buildings, blow some children sideways out of their kitchens during breakfast, take a victory lap on the Sunday morning talk shows. What could possibly go wrong? Quite a bit, as it turns out. That one didn't even require a comment. Here's another. Hypocrite Central, U.S., Britain, and Israel. I skipped over. Putin orders massive strike against Saudi Arabia if West attacks Syria. My comment, this is the most interesting possibility. The Saudis have been backing the rebels in Syria and causing no end of mischief in the Middle East. It would cause the price of gasoline to shoot through the roof. Just having the thought out there must give Obama and others pause. Here's another. Hypocrite Central. U.S., Britain, and Israel have used chemical weapons within the last 10 years. Those condemning Syria have themselves recently used chemical weapons. This is from Washington's blog. But the U.S. used chemical weapons against civilians in Iraq in 2004. Evidence. Here. Israel also used white phosphorus in 2009 during Operation Cast Lead. And perhaps subsequently, Israel ratified Protocol 3 of the Convention on Certain Conventional Weapons, which outlaws the use of incendiary devices in war in 2007. So this was a war crime. Moreover, the 1925 Geneva Protocol, which is different from Protocol 3, prohibits the use in war of asphyxiating poisonous or other gases. Here is another last. U.S.-Syria policy insult to common sense. This poor nation is totally in play now with funded foreign mercenaries flooding in to kill for money and glory. What will stop the U.S. war at any cost? Where is truth? And finally, today's paper, the Wisconsin State Journal. U.S. prepared to intervene. Syria, momentum appeared to build Tuesday for Western military action against Syria, with U.S., France, saying they were in position for a strike, while the government in Damascus vowed to use all possible measures to repel it. The prospect of a dramatic U.S.-led intervention into Syria's civil war stemmed from the West's assertion, still not endorsed by UN inspectors, that President Bashar Assad's government was responsible for an alleged chemical attack on civilians outside Damascus on August 21st, that the group of Doctors Without Borders says killed 355 people. Assad denies the claim. The Arab League also threw in its weight behind calls for punitive action, blaming the Syrian government for the attack and calling for those responsible to be brought to justice. Well, we're all for those responsible to be brought to justice, but there's overwhelming evidence that it wasn't the Syrian government. Why in God's name would the Syrian government do such a thing after all? Their forces on the ground have been defeating the rebels. It's been taking place systematically. There would have been no reason whatsoever for Assad to do this. Plus, this took place on the eve of the arrival of a UN inspection team. It would be idiotic for a government to perform an action like that when the UN inspection team is about to arrive. On the other hand, it would make eminent sense if this were a stage-contrived act, probably by Israeli forces, possibly by even U.S., but unquestionably by the other side, to create a situation that could create a phony pretext. And Ole, I'm sure you would agree that the rush, the incredible rush to judgment, the domination of the press, the repetition over and over and over again, the attempt to demonize the Syrian government, is exactly what we have seen in the past in relation to Saddam Hussein in Iraq and in relation to Muammar Gaddafi in Libya. It is disgusting. John Kerry got it right. It is obscene, but the obscenity is in the West and the leaders of the United States, England, France, and other Western nations.
Ooh. Listen, Jim, what I can say in my humble opinion, I think it's very easy to do the mistake to talk about different countries like the US, France, England as separate entities, which they are. But at the same time, in the agenda of the New World Order, they're connected, meaning that they have the same agenda, but behind hidden curtains. And these, they thrive on violence, they thrive on wars, they thrive on destruction, and they, what they want to accomplish is the Third World War. All of that, the rest, it's just a crap reason to be able to do it. They are making all of these statements being pumped out. I haven't followed this very closely, but what I know is that I've seen the same pattern again and again in many different situations. You mentioned Saddam Hussein, we had Gaddafi. There's so many, when you go over the history, it's been repeated again and again, how to trick the population into agreeing on attacking another country. Like, if we take the, for instance, USA, what in earth's name have they got to do in Syria to start with? And they're there to defend the people, they say. But that's the normal story. What they're doing instead is just rape and plunder and totally destroy the country, taking over the central bank, taking over, putting army bases there. And then they say after some years they withdraw, but they always leave the army bases there and the control over the country. So it's very scary and extremely sad to see the story repeat itself. I've traveled in many of these so-called strange countries like Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, Israel, Palestine, Iran, Iraq, these countries. And what I found everywhere is that the population are normally beautiful people, peace-loving. All they want is just to have a quiet, loving relationship with their family and friends, a life in peace, and have a good meal and a good laugh. I mean, they're being painted out as being violent terrorists and crazy maniacs. But the ones that are painting this picture are the warmongers, the ones that want the destruction at any cost. They want to get this started. They've tried to get it going with Iran for years to get the Third World War going. They didn't really manage there. So now they've gone through the what is called the Arab Spring, or I think that's what it's called, where they go from country to country. And I just think it's very important to see the key people who are taking part of a thing like this. And very often you will find that there's a very clear pattern showing that these people come from the groups I talked about before, the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission, or the Council on Foreign Relations. Members of these three people pop up everywhere on both sides very often when there are these types of conflicts. And if it's okay, I just wanted to go back to the Bosnian War, because that's a very clear pattern on how they do it. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure. The Bosnian War? Yes, yes, yes. Then I want to say more, make a few general remarks about why we're in this situation as a post 9/11 event.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the tools they use, when I say they, I mean this global elite, where these three groups are part of the pyramid, way up in the top, but not the absolute top. But they use the International Monetary Fund, they use the World Bank. These are their creations, and they use the UN troops and the NATO troops, which are also their creations, and the different power tools they use to enforce their power onto different people in different countries. And in the Bosnian War, we're talking about an area that was in beautiful peace. It was a country, the former Yugoslavian Republic, where there were three main groups, the Croatians, the Serbs, and the Muslims, which was a minority. But everybody was living beautifully side by side, marrying into each other's, I wouldn't say race, but groups and so on. So everything was good. But what happened was that the elite wanted to take up this part due to different issues. There was oil, there was weapons, there was drugs, and also, these were some of the main ingredients. So what they wanted to was to create a conflict down there. So what happened was that they, through the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, they withdrew a lot of loans from the country, making the economical situation just collapse. Money overnight turned into air. It wasn't worth anything anymore. And then through the local media, they started to pump out the propaganda against the other ones, saying it's the Muslims, they're the ones that are guilty to this horrible situation. And on the Muslim TV, it was the Serbs are doing this to us. And on the Croatian TV, it was the Serbs.
Sentences.
Or whatever that just
could
came.
Could you repeat your last couple sentences? We had a glitch here in our Skype connection.
Okay, so what they did was that they pumped out in the local media, they pumped out in the Muslim TV channels. They said that it's the Croatians and the Serbs. These are the ones. They are the guilty ones of this horrible situation. They are the ones that are guilty to that. We don't have money and we haven't got food on the table. And in the Serbian TV stations, they blamed the Croatians and the Muslims. And in the Croatian TV, they blamed the Serbs and the Muslims. Especially all sides blamed the Muslims. Anyway, so they built up this tension like a canister of powder, highly explosive. And then one day they just sent in a rocket that exploded in the middle of a marketplace. And all the news, it was just like igniting a bomb. And all the different local media straight away pointed to the other side. It was, they did it. There were people being killed on all sides. And that sparked it to start this whole thing getting off the ground. At that time, you had Slobodan Milosevic, which was the Serbian leader. Some of his advisors came from the Bilderberg Group. Radovan Karadzic, which was the Croatian leader, he also had an advisor that used to, as far as I remember, work for Margaret Thatcher and was also connected to the Bilderberg Group. So you have these advisors that are saying, let's go to war. And then in comes Lord Carrington, which was very high up in in the elite and a member of the Trilateral and the Bilderberg Group and so on. Lord Carrington from England and Henry Kissinger, which is one of the absolute main manipulators getting these kind of conflicts going. So every time you see Kissinger going somewhere to make peace, be aware he is going there to make war. That is his profession. Anyway, so Lord Carrington and Henry Kissinger went there. They failed. Instead, the whole war started going, escalating. And in the meantime, the media, the international media, pumped out images, horrible images to the world saying, look at these people are being slaughtered left, right, and center. What to do? What to do? We're back to problem, reaction, solution. They created a problem to get a reaction from us so that they could come with a solution. And anyway, so for more or less a year, there was all of these awful images being pumped out of people being slaughtered and so on. So after a while, what was agreed upon when Kissinger and Carrington couldn't sort this thing out, instead they sent from England Sir David Owen, who was also a member of the Bilderberg Group and one of the Trilateral or Council, I'm not really sure, but at least the Bilderberg Group. For about 1 year, he tried to sort the situation out with the advisors from Milosevic and Karadzic and so on. So we're talking about Bilderbergers speaking to Bilderbergers and not creating peace. Okay, so when Sir David Owen, when he failed, so-called failed, I mean, what this group wants is war, so they're doing exactly their agenda, but we are being pumped with that they are failing. So instead of, they called from a specialist from Norway, Thorvald Stoltenberg, who was also Bilderberger. And when there was another one, I can't remember his name, who was also Bilderberger, who came from another country. These two failed. So instead, after another year of horrible things being happening down there, genocide and all of these things, instead they sent for Jimmy Carter, who as an independent expert coming in to try and sort it out. He as well, Bilderberger Trilateral Council on Foreign Relations. And in the end, when in the absolute end of the war, in came the Swedish former Prime Minister Carl Bildt, who is a big Bilderberger as well. And they managed at that point to settle, as it was said, to settle and make peace down there after all of these years of horrendous murders and slaughter. And instead, he came in as a hero and solved the whole thing, and the Daytona agreement was signed. They found copies of the Daytona agreement that was dated even before the war started, meaning that it was all planned and so on. And then Carl Bildt stayed there and helped to rebuild the country, meaning that he gave the contracts to companies rebuilding the whole structure. But these companies were also owned by members of the elite. So it's very important also to understand that the people paying for these wars are, we are the ones. It's our tax money that goes to every time they fire a missile or they shoot or they helicopter shut down and so on. It's not a loss for the military industrial complex. They just charge the taxpayers. It's the taxpayers. They want destruction. So every single bomb that they can manage to throw, there's a bill to the taxpayer. Every single helicopter that is shut down, oh my God, what a pity. We have to develop even more powerful helicopters and missiles and whatever awful things they do on the expense of the taxpayers. And one of the reasons why they created this whole thing in the Balkan War was they created the problem to get the reaction from us saying, my God, we have to get the UN troops in there to make peace so that this stops. But the UN troops were sent in there. They weren't allowed to fire. They weren't allowed to do anything. They weren't allowed to interfere, which they haven't been allowed to in most of these war zones. The only thing they can do is write down on a piece of paper, yes, they raped 14 children. Yes, they burnt down the whole village. Yes, they did. They weren't allowed to do anything, which made the reaction from people in the surrounding countries saying, oh my God, something has to be done. And what was done was that out of that came the biggest army, international army in the world at that time, a combination of different countries from the UN troops and the NATO troops together that started the creation of this world army that is now threatening the world. I mean, they're just building it up, pumping it up, pumping it up. So when it comes to these so-called war songs, it's the same thing they do again and again. Like I said, I haven't followed this in the news because it's the same template they use. Again, they demonize someone. They want to take that. They want to take over the country. And very often it's the countries where they cannot control the central bank. There's only a very few left. I think there's three left now, North Korea and Iran. And Libya was also one of those. I'm not sure about Syria, but when they cannot control the central bank, that is one of the countries they go after at any means. And what they do is pump out this propaganda about them having, what was it, chemical war? If it's not chemical warfare, then it's nuclear power plant or weapons, or they make up whatever story sounds good in the media that will persuade the population to say, yeah, go and bomb those bastards, instead of looking into the situation and understanding that these are totally innocent people, innocent countries that are just being totally raped and devastated and plundered for generations to come. Look at Iraq. It's an absolute disgrace to mankind what has been done there in the name of liberty or whatever it's, or freedom or whatever they call these operations.
And it's all a consequence of an Israeli plan to devastate the modern sophisticated Arab states, such as Iraq and now Syria. In Iraq, for example, they had a national healthcare system. They had national public education. They had a reliable infrastructure providing water and electricity. They had artifacts and antiquities dating back thousands of years. But Saddam Hussein had abandoned the petrodollar. In Libya, Muammar Gaddafi was one of the great humanitarian leaders. I mean, a benevolent dictator is the most efficient form of government and can be the most beneficial to the people. He shared Libyan oil revenues with the people of Libya. He provided them with housing. He provided $25,000 equivalent stipends to couples who just were getting married. He was developing one of the great agricultural projects in the world, the great waterworks that would have turned the northern Africa into a veritable oasis. He was on the verge of being awarded a humanitarian medal by the United Nations. And yet the first action of the so-called rebel group is to found a new central bank. You're absolutely right, Ole, about that. He had been promoting the gold dinar, which might very well have become the currency of Africa. They had to cut it off. The reason Iran is being targeted in large part is because it also abandoned the petrodollar and went to an oil port where it trades in many different currencies. Plus, of course, its own peaceful nuclear energy program can produce fuel rods for the peaceful use of nuclear energy at a lower cost than can the American nuclear energy industry, so that it doesn't want competition. It wants to maintain a monopoly if it can. All these things have to do with economics, with money. As Smedley Butler, who is a celebrated Marine Corps general who received two Congressional Medals of Honor, observed in his booklet, War is a Racket, reflecting back on his career, he observed that the Marine Corps had been used for one military operation after another to prop up the profits of American corporations. And it's disgusting, and it's going on. And this is a form of neocolonialism here. We're invading these countries to exploit their resources. In Afghanistan, they have a vast mineral wealth, including gold and copper and iron deposits, but also one of the world's largest deposits of lithium, which is used in components and computers and nuclear weapons and in electric car batteries. In Iraq, obviously, the vast oil supply, which you could use two different ways. You could leave it in the ground and raise the price of other reserves, or you could take it out cheap and sell it dear and make a huge profits. Lots of money is being made on these wars. It's costing trillions, and one might say, well, you know, even if trillions are being made, that doesn't seem to be profitable, except that the trillions being spent, as you observe, are coming out of the taxpayers' pockets, while the trillions that are being made by private corporations like Halliburton and Raytheon and a host of other military industrial corporations. It's completely disgusting. And the pseudo justification being used here, you know, that the Syrian government in this phony gas attack is supposed to be killing its own people. But what are George Bush and Dick Cheney and Barack Obama and Joe Biden doing by sending American troops into these countries where they are killed? They are killing our own children, our own people, on the basis of fabricated justifications. It's completely disgusting. It's completely obscene, and I condemn it. At one point, I was taken in and believe Barack Obama was a decent human being. He's not. He completely disgusts me. He's betrayed his oath of office to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. And only it goes back to 9/11. In fact, even earlier, Benjamin Netanyahu published a book in 1987 entitled Terrorism, How the West Can Win. Before any the concept of terrorism was apparent. There was no war on terror at that point in time. It was with the demise of the Soviet Union in 1990-91, there was no boogeyman to justify those vast military-industrial expenditures. Everyone expected a peace dividend. So they needed to have a replacement. They needed a new boogeyman. And it was very cleverly contrived to promote the interests of Israel that it should be in the Middle East, where members of the Project for the New American Century, including many joint U.S.-Israeli citizens who had become prominent members of the Department of Defense in the Bush-Cheney administration, argued that there was a unique historical opportunity to create an American empire worldwide for the next 100 years if the United States would only move aggressively into the Middle East and then exert military and diplomatic power outward from that geopolitically sensitive area. So they contrived 9/11. It was done with complicity from the United States neocons and the Mossad. Indeed, it appears that the New York attack was outsourced to the Mossad. We have done a great deal of research, including the study of the dust samples from the U.S. Geological Survey gathered in New York. They're extensive. They're varied. They are extremely revealing. They include barium and strontium and lanthanum and lithium and massive quantities of tritium. These are all signs of the use of nuclear weapons. This was not a conventional Hiroshima-Nagasaki-style use of weapons. These were mini or micro neutron bombs, which can be fine-tuned and adjusted to have a very specific radius of destruction. If you look at the North and the South Tower, according to NIST, the South Tower was destroyed in 9 seconds, the North in 11. Now, if you assume that they were using mini or micro nukes to destroy, say, a cube of 10 floors per second, then since the North Tower was completely standing, had all 110 stories standing, that would take 11 seconds at the rate of 1 10-floor cube per second using mini or micro neutron bombs. In the case of the South Tower, because the top 3 floors tilted over and were blown as one, it would take 9. So there's a very reasonable hypothesis. These buildings are being blown apart from the top down. Mm-hmm. They're being converted into millions of cubic yards of very fine dust. And when it's done, Ole, there is nothing left. There is no massive pile of debris. In the building 7, the situation's quite the opposite. It's a classic controlled demolition. All the floors are coming down at the same time. It's not blowing apart. In the Twin Towers, all the floors remain stationary, waiting their turn to be blown to kingdom come, in the memorable phrase of Morgan Reynolds. So what's going on here? It's very clear they were done completely differently, although Dmitry Kolosov has suggested that it could have been 150 kiloton bombs in the sub-basements. That's inconsistent with the observable evidence and would have defeated one of the principal reasons for using this very sophisticated method to destroy the Twin Towers, namely preserving what is known as the bathtub, which is a kind of a dike or moat that surrounds the basement, the foundation of the Twin Towers, so Hudson River water couldn't flood beneath them, and lower Manhattan and the subway tunnels and the path trade tunnels. They had to preserve the bathtub. That meant they had to find a design, a method that would blow the buildings apart, destroy them without any significant portion of those 500,000-ton buildings coming down into the bathtub. And they figured out how to do it. So we know, we have massive evidence of Israel's complicity in this. See, for example, Israel did 9/11, all the proof in the world, which is only an exaggeration to this extent. Israel could not have arranged for the stand down of the U.S. Air Force, so there'd be no interdiction of any of the alleged hijacked aircraft, nor could it have arranged for a fake attack to take place on the Pentagon. Plus, there were changes in the standard operating procedure for interdictions that were made in June. Rumsfeld, of course, announced the missing $2.3 trillion the day before 9/11 from the Pentagon budget. Dov Zakheim, who was a joint U.S.-Israeli citizen, was a controller of the Pentagon at the time. We know who was involved here. We also know that the Twin Towers were destroyed by using mini or micro nukes. Here is putting two and two together, Ole. What that means is that the Twin Towers were destroyed using Israeli nukes. And the reason for concluding that is not only that we know it was nuclear, that we know that this was outsourced to Israel, and there's a mountain of proof involved here, including that Larry Silverstein immediately fired the security team that had been looking after the Twin Towers since they first opened in 1970, and got himself an insurance policy that included an anti-terrorist attack provision. So that when he later, claimed that because there had been two planes that had been a double attack, he got double indemnity, so that he made over $4.4 billion on a $114 million investment. He'd only actually owned the Twin Towers 6 weeks before the attack would take place. What we also know is that the American and other nations' nuclear arsenals are very tightly controlled and monitored. It would have been virtually impossible for American nuclear weapons to have been used in this attack, even though many who believe that it was a nuclear attack would have drawn that inference and have believed that in the past. The fact is that Israel, among all the nuclear nations, is the only one that has not signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty that does not allow inspectors, where its nukes even appear to have been recently used in Syria, which would, gave the Russians an opportunity to intervene in Syria to send their S-300, S-400 anti-missile systems, which I'm confident will defeat any cruise missile attack on Syria, which is going to lead to World War III. Mark that well, because we're on the verge of a catastrophic precipice. We're back in the nuclear, Cuban nuclear missile crisis had the great advantage that John F. Kennedy, a man of great intelligence, wisdom, and education, was at the helm. In Barack Obama, we have a CIA stooge who appears to be completely incompetent and have no control over events and who's continued to violate his oath of office, so that it would have been easy for the Israelis to use their nukes in the Twin Towers with no one being the wiser because of their non-willingness to sign the Non-Proliferation Treaty or to allow inspectors. This is a matter of putting two plus two together and arriving at the conclusion that Israel nuked the WTC on 9/11, an article on which I am publishing this very day, Ole. So here we are, with a phony justification that that Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, which were creations of the United States, where Osama was our man in Afghanistan, were falsely blamed. Now the United States is coming to aid of the rebels, which are allied with Al-Qaeda. Not only is our foreign policy completely chaotic and incoherent, but we're giving phony justifications to perform more wars for Israel at the cost of more American lives and more depletion of the American treasury. The situation is as disgusting as it gets. And on that note, Ole, we're going to take a break. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, with my very special guest today, Ole Damigard. We're going to return to discussion of assassinations following this.
Michelle, That's all I want to say. Until I find a way, I will say the only words I know that you understand. Michelle, ma belle, sans des mots qui vont très bien ensemble, I need to, I need to, I need to, I need to make you see, oh, what you mean to me. Until I do, I'm hoping you will know what I mean. I love you.
Even Bush admits that Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11. Our own FBI acknowledged it has no hard evidence that ties Osama bin Laden to 9/11. But if Saddam had nothing to do with 9/11, and if Osama had nothing to do with 9/11, then who did it?
Who did it?
The 9/11 conspiracy provides the answer. Discover the big picture. Learn what we know now. Find out what it means. 11 experts contribute to exposing the truth as the anatomy of an atrocity. Edited by James H. Fetzer. Buy it now if you have the courage to face the truth. Just don't think you're going to like it. The 9/11 conspiracy provides...
up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people. Where do they all belong? Father Mackenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear. No one comes near, look at him working, darning his socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong?
This is Jim Fetzer continuing my conversation with Ole Damegaard. Ole, I know you've done so much research on so many events, including Oklahoma City and then the assassination of JFK, Martin Luther King, Bobby. I'd like to pick up wherever you think most appropriate. I'm so glad to have you here, and there was a very positive response to our last conversation.
Thank you for that. First of all, I just want to totally agree with you. I think it's very important to understand that this group of people, where your government is very deeply involved, but in this global elite, I mean, we're talking criminals on a level that is indescribable. They're super criminal, and the worst kind of criminals there are, I would say, because they are no feelings for who they devastate or mutilate or totally destroy. And I think it's so important for people in uniform, I'm talking police, I'm talking soldiers and so on, that sign up and think they're doing it for a good cause and to defend their country and to defend freedom and so on. That they understand.
Yes.
That people in uniform, like I said, I mean both soldiers and police officers, security people and so on, that they start educating themselves and start seeing who they're actually serving. Because the way things have changed in the world, with NATO and the American army and so on and the UN troops, they're just enforcers. They're just like mafia enforcers that are pushing forward a bastard agenda of rape and plunder and total murder. And all of these fancy, beautiful words of serving your country and standing up for what is right and so on, it's just brainwashing. It's just brainwashing. They're being totally used, and the people who are using them could not care less. They're just empty uniforms to them. And the day they don't fit in anymore, they will just be deposed, taken care of, getting out of the way. And when I think when I compare to Ayatollah Khomeini, when he came to power, he did it in a very devious way. I would say very much, I know this sounds shocking maybe, but I think in a very similar way of how Barack Obama came into the stage, where the Shah had been controlling and put so much force on the Iranian people that when it finally exploded, with the help of the CIA, they were undermining the whole and pumping the whole thing up. And so no one really took the time to check out who Ayatollah Khomeini was. And when he came to power, he was seen as the messiah, the savior. And everybody was just so focused on getting rid of the Shah that they did not check this guy out. Same with Barack Obama. Everybody was so fed up with George Bush Jr. that nobody really checked this Barack Obama out. He just came in as the savior, the messiah, pumped up by media. And what happened was that they did not understand that both of these people had a totally different agenda than they showed to start with. In the Khomeini's case, he for 6 months he had everybody think they were totally free. So all the resistance groups, all the people that from Mujahideen and other groups that had been suppressed for such a long time and tracked down and killed, suddenly they felt that they were free. They were out in the streets speaking openly, and everybody was so happy and dancing, and it was just beautiful. But what they did not know was that Khomeini had taken over the secret police of the Shah, the Savak. So they just continued that, even though the Shah left the country, Savak just continued. And what they did during these 6 months was to just monitor the whole future resistance. And then one night, overnight, they just made mass arrests and took hundreds and hundreds, I would say the thousands of people were detained overnight. And what they did was they didn't only take the guy who they saw as a problem, but they also took his friends, family, kids, and so on, who could be potential enemies in the future. So it was a total shock overnight when Khomeini just turned his face around. And also, one thing that I think there's quite a lot of similarities are that after some years when he was in power, he started fearing his own military. So he on a regular basis, he had to chop the heads of generals, the top generals, chop, 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 out with them, in with new ones. Then after a while, oof, they're getting too powerful, chop, 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 out with them. And I see the same pattern here with Barack Obama. Now there's these top military people that could become a threat to them. Then he has to get rid of them. One out, 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 out. But I think it's very extremely important to see that this Barack Obama, he is not somebody who does not know what he's doing. He's a front figure doing a top job of perpetrating or showing off as a very honest and caring human being that wants good for the world. But what he's actually doing, he's the front face of a killer machine, a total machine of destruction and terror. And I just say once again to the people in uniform that please wake up, see who you're serving, because what you're doing in the name of what you think is freedom and justice and so on is rape and plunder and slaughter. It's a total disgrace, and I can just say please inform yourself, put down your weapons and stop it, you know, because without the military force, these people are nothing. They're just without, they think they're powerful, but it's a very small group.
Oli, I'm fascinated by what you're saying about Khomeini, because it seems to me that that may be the plan of Barack Obama, the DHS, and the NSA. I mean, they're targeting the, you know, this massive surveillance, which began 7 months before 9/11. Not to look for threats to national security. In fact, there was a report by a subcommittee of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Intelligence, which was released on 3 October 2012, that based upon a survey of 680 fusion center reports for fusion centers merged federal, state, and local anti-terrorist activity collected between 2009 and 2010, that in those 680 reports spread all over the country by entities that would have a keen interest in exposing terrorist activity, if there were any, they found absolutely none, zero, zilch, nada, zip, not a single indication of domestic terrorist activity. Now, a sample that large and varied is a very reliable basis for inferring that if not non-existent, at least domestic terrorist activity in the United States is virtually non-existent. You have a greater chance of dying from being struck by lightning or falling in a bathtub than you do by being killed by terrorist activity. So it's clear that they cannot be conducting this massive surveillance to identify domestic terrorists because they're virtually, if not completely, non-existent. Now, what they are doing is targeting veterans, constitutionalists, Ron Paul supporters, 9/11 truthers, NRA members, anyone who might pose a potential threat not to the nation's security, but to the national security state. These are individuals who might be willing to rise up in opposition to the imposition of a fascistic police state led by Homeland Security with guidance from the NSA. And Oli, they apparently have put together a list called the Main Corps, that of the American population, which exceeds 300 million, includes as many as 8 million on this Main Corps list. And it would not surprise me if they were planning the kind of, overnight mass arrest of millions of Americans that you describe having take place in Iran under Khomeini here in the United States. Here are a couple reasons to think so. Not only is there no domestic terrorist threat, but the Department of Homeland Security has acquired over 2 billion rounds of .40 caliber hollow point ammunition, which is not even permissible for use in combat under the Hague Convention of 1899 because it rips people apart. You know, it's designed to maim and kill not to wound and take soldiers out of combat, but to rip them apart. They have acquired 2,700 light tanks of the kind that were deployed in Boston. Very clearly an effort to make the massive presence of a military force in American cities seem semi-normal. They did this because there was one 19-year-old suspect on the lam from even if he committed the crime, a very modest bombing, which we know, of course, was actually staged. The actual perps were the members of a small mercenary force called Kraft International. We have the backpack, which had a white mark on it that blew up. We have photos of one of them wearing the black backpack with a white mark. We have photos of him rushing away from the scene of the explosion without his backpack. This is all ridiculous and contrived, but intended to compensate for the absence of any bona fide domestic terrorist threat by fabricated or fake ones. And that, of course, is what's going on here now today. They've acquired over 7,000 assault rifles of the kind that they have tried to ban. In fact, all that stands between Homeland Security and the imposition of a massive fascistic police state is 100 million armed Americans, which is why Obama is going crazy trying to find some way to constrain the ownership of weapons or the registration so they can be confiscated. This I absolutely oppose 100%. I say when they come for our guns, the time has come to use them, and I mean that. Live free or die must be our motto, and we are in a terrible situation. So that, you know, we have to be prepared for a night of the kind that you describe under Khomeini. Now, on behalf of Khomeini, let me observe, Iran is a peaceful nation that hasn't attacked any other nation for over 300 years. Its engagement with Iraq was after Iraq initiated aggressive war against Iran, which we aided and abetted, and which brought about the loss of about a million lives on both sides. It was a terrible, terrible event, but it was not of Iran's initiation. It has no nuclear weapons program. The Ayatollahs have been very emphatic. The Ayatollah Khomeini, who succeeded Khomeini, has emphasized nuclear energy for all, nuclear weapons for none. They have signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty. They have allowed inspectors. There's no justification for it whatsoever. It has completely different origins, as I've explained before. The fact that Obama has imposed sanctions, which are an act of war on Iran, is completely disgusting once again. The United States has disgraced itself with one war after another on innocent people who had nothing to do with 9/11, that in an event that has massively benefited Israel and no one else. Ariel Sharon, not long after 9/11, observed, well, we own America, and the Americans know it. It's disgusting, it's disgraceful, and it must come to an end.
Mm. Well, like I say, highly criminal people, extremely criminal people.
And Ole, while we're spending so much time on this, I want you to know I will have you back. I think you're a marvelous resource. And if we don't, you know, discuss what we originally had planned to discuss because of the onset of imminent events, don't worry not that I will be bringing you back, and I want to assure the audience, who very much appreciates having you here on the show with me.
That's very kind of you. I'm very happy to do whatever I can to do my part in dissolving this situation.
But you know, I was unaware that Khomeini had retained the Savak and used them to control the opposition, and it's absolutely fascinating by the parallel here, where the NSA can be identifying all the perps that Homeland Security will then, you know, arrest overnight. I mean, this would not surprise me one iota, not a bit.
No, this is exactly what they did, and the members of SAVAK were given the option: either you die or you work for us. It was very simple, like that. So most of them chose to continue working, but this time for Khomeini. And they did that for a long time. I don't know about the situation now, but I was there in 84, in the middle of the war, and the SAVAK was very dominant. You know, it was a scary, 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 and people were being taken off the street. You know, never to be seen again, and they had underground prisons where people just disappeared in the thousands. It very scary, very scary.
The sort of thing that occurred in Argentina when the military came control there, the disappeared. There were at least 10,000 in Argentina. It sounds as though the number in Iran may have been even greater.
This is what I'm saying again over and over again. It's they're using like a template. They're just moving it from country to country, and they change some details, but it's a working formula. So they just use it wherever it's needed. So,
Ole, we've done a nice job on this, and because we ran long the first segment, we'll go short this one, and then return to discuss the subjects of our original intent, namely assassinations and other traumatic events here in the United States. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, with my special guest today, Ole Domegaard.
Would you think if I sang out a tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song, and I'll try not to sing out of key. Oh, I get by with a little help from my friend. I get high with a little help from my friend. Gonna try with a little help from my friend.
On the 50th observance of the death of JFK, Santa Barbara is the place to be. Dallas will be locked down tighter than a drum. The cutting edge of JFK research will be in Santa Barbara. This is an event you don't want to miss. Phil Nelson on the pivotal role of LBJ. John Hankey on George Herbert Walker Bush and his hit team. Peter Janney on Mary Meyer and her diary. Ralph Sinque on the man in the doorway. Larry Rivera on Buell Wesley Fraser. Judith Baker on Lee and Lee in New Orleans. Jim Fetzer on the assassination of America. This is an event you don't want to miss. Go to JFK 50th, the keys to understanding his assassination, on Veterans Today for more. Be there.
Stem cell research. Abortion. Cloning. Evolution. Creation science. Intelligent design. These are hot button issues today. Religion and science. Morality and government.
corporations, and fascism. If you want to know what's happening to this nation this very day, then you won't want to miss Render Unto Darwin. After 35 years of teaching logic, critical thinking, and scientific reasoning, Jim Fetzer offers a critique of the Christian Rights Crusade against science. If you want to understand the issues, if you want to be informed, this is a book you won't want to miss. Render Unto Darwin, at Amazon.com and the major bookstores. Render Unto Darwin.
Veer Radio is listener supported. We need your donations to pay for live internet streaming radio, our toll-free call-in number, and our website, free MP3 archive links, and interactive forums. RevereRadioNetwork.com and click on the Make a Donation button.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, concluding my conversation with Ole Damegaard. We originally were going to talk about issues like Oklahoma City, Martin Luther King, Bobby Kennedy, and related issues in relation to assassination. Instead, we're talking about the mass killing of people, weapons, alleged weapons of mass destruction, and all the other hokum that goes with contrived wars for the benefit of Israel. Ole, please, you have a website. I want to make sure everyone knows. Please tell us about the website and where it can be found.
My website is www.lightonconspiracies.com, lightonconspiracies.com. And there I have, among other things, my book, Coup d'etat in Slow Motion, about the assassination of Olof Palme, the Swedish Prime Minister, but also with all the very strong links that connects that assassination all the way back to Dealey Plaza when JFK was assassinated. I mean, there were actually people in Dealey Plaza who was also part of doing the killing in Stockholm, according to my research. And these this hit team has been used in so many different areas. Over many years, they were part of killing John Lennon. They were part of the Watergate burglary. They were part of killing Che Guevara and so on. It just goes on and on. So
and these were individuals who were involved in Operation 40, am I right?
That is one of the links between them. But coup d'etat in slow motion, it's almost 1,000 pages long, and the last 200 pages are lists of the Bilderberg membership lists from 1954 all the way up to today. Also with the agenda for because the secret agenda and the people who take part of these meetings will show you where the world is going. I mean, what is happening in the world today was planned a year or two ago at these meetings. So it's very, in my opinion, very, very important to find out who these people are and how they interact and what their agenda is. So that's why these membership lists are there. So people can themselves have a look and see the people you recognize, because all of them are people in nice, very expensive suits, in key people in media, the jurisdiction system, royal families, military industrial companies. They're all over the place. Bankers,
the judiciary system, the courts, the attorneys,
exactly,
and all that.
Exactly. And this is why it's also very important that when there is a conflict, like, for instance, when John Kerry stands up and says things like that, it's very important to know that he was a member of the Skull and Bones Society, just as George Bush Sr. and his son and so on. And they look like they're different, that they are standing on different sides of a problem, but they're in the same group, just giving you an illusion of democracy, an illusion of that there's an option, an illusion of a choice where there is not. They're all in it. So I think it's very important to find out who these people are. Anyway, I also think that it's important to find out what happened to JFK, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and so on, not because it's a historical event, but because the people involved are very, very active to this very day. The power elite that was behind these assassinations are behind so much of the destruction that is still going on. So that's why I find it very important to expose the details so that people become aware of how these people got to that place. It's like you see people like Dick Cheney or Rumsfeld or these guys, and most people just didn't know about them before they came to the White House. But these people have been very, very active for years and years and years, and in most of the cases, very, very shady businesses. So,
Ole, you know, today, I mean, since you mentioned how the same groups or members of the Operation 40 and others were used repeatedly over and over again, today, that might be the best thing to dwell on. I'd like it if you were to go through different cases and talk about who was involved and how these members were used over and over, because I'm glad to bring you back again to get into the, you know, more specific details of some other cases we haven't discussed as extensively, but perhaps you could weave it all together into a, you know, the broad picture of how these people were used over and over again.
For sure. Could I please just a little detail about the Oklahoma City one?
Absolutely.
Because
absolutely.
The Oklahoma City case is a classical case of problem, reaction, solution, how the one in power secretly creates a problem, in this case a bomb, to get a reaction from the public so that he can come with a solution. And this is the same with 9/11 and so many other cases. And one of the reasons they did the Oklahoma City was to get to these small groups that were independent groups, were, what do you call these in the States, like small societies where they had their own laws, their own weapons, and totally independent, could not be controlled. That was one of the reasons, but also the whole terror.
Oh, the militias, the militias you're talking about.
Exactly, yes. But also there was another reason with Oklahoma City that I don't think very many people are aware of. Do you remember there was a scandal called the Whitewater scandal, where Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton was very deeply involved? It was a real estate scandal where they had
yes. Yes.
done a, Yeah, done a lot of shady business. I mean, around, if you check out the history of Bill Clinton and Hillary, there's a long series of people being murdered and very illegal real estate business and other type of shady businesses going on there. But the Alfred P. Murray building that was blown up in Oklahoma City, what happened this day, not only was there was bomb squads coming in and placing these bombs beforehand. I mean, witnesses saw that. Not at all the Timothy McVeigh and these other people that were blamed for it, but these were experts being pulled in and doing the job. But after the building exploded, and there were people everywhere trying to save casualties and wounded people out of the ruins, there were a warning. They were called off because there was people going around shouting, there's secondary bombs, there's another bomb here. You have to leave the area. So while people were dying in the rubble, everybody had to go back 100, 200 meters. And instead, in came two or three vans with people dressed in blue overalls. And what they did was they went straight into different office rooms and brought out what do you call them, these office furnitures with files and so on. And the files that disappeared that day in these vans were files that was brought from MENA in Arkansas that was totally pointing out Bill and Hillary Clinton in this Whitewater scandal. They had just been transferred from MENA to the Alfred P. Murray building. So when after the bombs went off, people were told to step back, and while people were dying, these people, the only thing they came there for was to get rid of the evidence, and then the vans took off and people were allowed to come back in and try to save whoever could be saved.
Unbelievable.
I mean, this is the type of mentality we're talking about. They do not care about normal people. It's just a matter of them and
self-preservation, so they can continue their ongoing criminal activities.
Exactly.
That's absolutely shocking. I had no idea. Ole, I thought it was to discredit militias, but of course the bombing was so ridiculous, the fertilizer bomb couldn't possibly have brought about that kind of destruction. It was in an open area. Most of the energy would have been dissipated outward, not into the building. And then, of course, there was a second series of blasts from explosives that were actually connected to the core columns of the building. There were firefighters later who brought some of the unexploded explosive devices out of the building. There was a seismic signature from the first and the second blasts, and the second was overwhelmingly more powerful than the first.
Yeah, exactly. And I was just mentioning this. I thought that your listeners were very aware of the details, that this is a total setup, the staged event, you know, where the insiders, it's not at all the patsies that have done this. This is done from the inside to create this whole thing. I just wanted to mention this because I thought it was a detail that very few people are aware of.
Oh, I think it's very important. I want you to exercise your judgment about how you want to use the rest of this. Please just talk about whichever, and if it's Martin and Bobby, that's fine.
Okay, I would like to just go to Bobby Kennedy as well, because like I said, I think it's very important to just find out who were the mechanics, how did they do it, who was part of it. And in the Robert Kennedy assassination, there's one mystery around a lady that has always been called the lady in the polka dot dress.
Yes.
This was a woman who was seen together with Sirhan Sirhan. She was like a controller of him during the days before and also at the actual day when the assassination was done at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles. I think also, please be aware of Los Angeles, because many of these assassinations that have been covered up big time have been done in Los Angeles. We're talking Whitney Houston, Michael Jackson, Robert Kennedy, Marilyn Monroe, and so on. There's a long series where I think it's not a coincidence that they use that area, because they've got insiders there. You can see it the way the investigation is done, how evidence is just totally destroyed within a few days. Well, like with Robert Kennedy, there was, I think, 4,200 pictures was burnt just a few days, months
and they took apart the pantry and they destroyed it because allegedly it wouldn't fit into a file card file.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, the ridiculous
explanations for the destruction of evidence are, you know, Americans have to be the most gullible saps in the world to believe any of this rubbish.
Yeah. Anyway, there were, like I said last time, there was one of the members in the Operation 40, in that group of top-skilled assassins that was instigated by Richard Nixon and helped to be funded by George Bush Sr. His name was David Morales. He was he was in Dealey Plaza. He was also the guy who shot Che Guevara on the order of Felix Rodriguez, another member in Operation 40 and controlled by George Bush Sr. There was also another.
My understanding is he was with the Bolivian forces when they tracked Che down and killed him, and then he lopped off his head and kicked it 100 yards away so that no one would have any doubts that he was dead.
That's the story. I don't know if that is a story or if it's true, but I know that he killed him for sure. Anyway, there's been a big mystery about this lady in the polka dot dress. She was described as an extremely beautiful woman, around 25, very beautiful body. All the witnesses said that she was very well figured and so on. And through other people's investigations, I managed to track down this woman, and I believe that the real identity of her was Kathy Ainsworth. She was a school teacher in Meriden, Mississippi, a very extreme right-wing militant woman. She looked like the most peaceful, beautiful person, but she was involved in quite a few very violent attacks on people they didn't approve of, and bomb attacks.
Repeat her name.
Sorry?
Repeat her name, please.
Her name, Kathy Ainsworth.
Kathy Ainsworth. Has much study been done on her?
I don't think so. But anyway, at the Ambassador Hotel, the lady in the polka dot dress left together with a young man, a dark, slim guy in his mid-20s or something. And they ran out just after the shooting. And there was a witness in the stairs who heard them say, yeah. "My God, we got them. We shot him.
And she asked who, and they said, Senator Kennedy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we shot Senator Kennedy. Exactly. Anyway, this witness has never been taken seriously. Instead, she's been harassed
and belittled and all that. Yeah.
That is also standard procedure. But anyway, this Kathy Ainsworth, she was working together with a other right-wing extremist called Tom Tarrant. And what is very interesting, I think, is that there's a lot that points to these two being the ones involved in the Robert Kennedy assassination. And what I find extremely interesting is also that just a few weeks after the assassination of Robert Kennedy, these two, Kathy Ainsworth and Tom Tarrant, was set up by J. Edgar Hoover to do a bomb attack on, I can't remember his name, I think it was a Jewish guy or something like that. And the bomb was supplied by the FBI for them to do this terror attack. But instead, what the FBI did was that they set up an ambush so that when Ainsworth and Tarrant came to the house, just before they was about to leave the car to place the bomb, instead, they were being shot to pieces by the FBI. And Kathy Ainsworth was killed instantly. Tom Tarrant, I think he was hit 5 or 6 times, but he survived.
When did this happen, Ole? When was this?
It was just a few weeks after the assassination of the JFK.
Oh, so they wanted to get rid of her because she'd been a participant. They didn't want to leave any loose threads.
There you go. And what is also interesting is that J. Edgar Hoover personally was following this case extremely close on a daily basis until she was dead. So in my opinion, it's like, just like you say, how to get rid of someone. This Tom Tarrant, he spent quite a few years in jail, and afterwards he emigrated to Israel, where he is, I think he reborn Christian, or I think he's working as a tour guide in Jerusalem. So he's still around, but he was a highly wanted guy there for a while. Anyway, there's another, if I can spend these minutes
Please,
in a good time.
Go for it.
Regarding the Martin Luther King assassination, there's been this, James Earl Ray has always said that he was approached by a guy called Raoul. That was the only name he had. A guy called Raoul that asked him to go cross the border and buy a rifle and then deliver that in Memphis. And after he was set up, James Earl Ray never wanted to really expose what he knew. He didn't know the people behind the assassination. I don't think so. But he was so involved in many other things, and also knowing that he could so easily be taken care of. I mean, he was put in jail for his lifetime. So, but he kept mentioning this Raoul. And as far as I know, his real name is Raoul Salcedo. Raoul Salcedo, and he's still around as well.
Where is he from and so forth?
I don't know so much about him. I think, but this is only what I think, that he was exiled Cuban as well as many of the other people in Operation 40. But the real killer of Martin Luther King was not James Earl Ray, but... the Memphis, a lieutenant from the Memphis Police Department. His name was Earl Clark. He was the best sharpshooter in Memphis, and he was the one that that did the actual shooting. When they did it, it just went like with the other assassinations. They never only trust one shooter. Most of the time, it's like triangular fire, and it was in this case as well. There was at least one other shooter aiming at Martin Luther King when he was killed. This Earl Clark, he was standing in the bushes right in front of the Lorraine Motel, and the shot come from straight from the front and hit him in the neck. But if you look at when you stand on the balcony where he was shot, if you look to the left, there's about 200-300 meters, and there's a fire. Not fire station, there's a hotel, and there was a Green Beret army troop from the, I think, the 111th unit that was on the ceiling, keeping him under surveillance with sharpshooters, guns aimed at him. And these people have stepped forward and told about this. And he was also being surveilled from the fire station right in front of the Lorraine Motel, so that the assassination, as far as I know, was actually filmed. When it comes to the Olof Palme assassination, there's very strong rumors also saying that that was filmed as well, because they knew beforehand what was going to go down. And this Olof Palme assassination, it would be interesting if you would be open for that maybe in one program we could go into details with the Palme assassination, because is an extremely, extremely interesting and very multi-layered and complex assassination that has led to also the death of almost 1,000 people, as far as I know, because I truly believe that the sinking, the blowing up of the MS Estonia, the ferry, I don't know if you know about that in the States, in 1994 there was a ferry going from Estonia to Sweden that sunk and almost 1,000 people were killed, and I have hardcore facts showing that she was actually blown up, and that one of the major reasons why she was blown up was to cover up the real reason behind the Olof Palme assassination. So I could go into that in great detail if you would be interested in another time.
Oh, absolutely, Ole, absolutely. I expect to have you back many times. I think you are wonderful. I'm so pleased to know you're out there doing such high-quality research on these events, which are so incredibly important, and I'm please, before we have to conclude today, and I look forward to having you back in the near future, would you please again review where your website is located for those of our listeners who would like to pursue your work, and tell us again about your book.
Okay, it's the three W's, lightonconspiracies.com.
L-I-G-H-T. And that doesn't mean conspiracy light. It means shedding light, illuminating conspiracies.
Exactly, shedding light on conspiracy. So it's light on conspiracies, and it's plural.com. And the book is called Coup d'etat in slow motion. Also, I send out a newsletter. It's a video newsletter twice a month where I try to, in a clear, easy way, expose many of these different events so that people can judge see with their own two eyes and make up their own mind about many of these events. Because it's one thing when people talk about it, but when you actually see what happened, then it's so much easier to understand it. And newsletters are for free. Can I just say that if somebody are interested in supporting me, there are donation buttons on the website, and it's extremely appreciated, extremely, because I've spent, I think it's about 30 years of my life doing such hard work looking into these things, and with no income or very little during these years. So it is, like I say, extremely appreciated if somebody wants to support me.
I know the feeling, Ole. I appreciate that. I think you're wonderful. I look forward to having you back. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, thanking my special guest today, Ole Damigard, speaking to us from Spain.
Yesterday, all my troubles seemed so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, I'm not half the man I used to be. There's a shadow hanging over me. Oh, yesterday came suddenly. Why she had to go, I don't know. She wouldn't say. I said something wrong. Now I long for yesterday. Yesterday, love was such an easy game to play. Now I need a place to hide away. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Why she had to go, I don't know. She wouldn't say. I said something. Love was such an easy game to play. Now I need a place to hide away. Oh, I believe in yesterday.